In this week's podcast, we're visiting with an old friend, Kristen Lindquist. She's an accomplished wordsmith, and as we know, she's a super writer of haiku. And today, we'll see that her prose is beautiful too. Join us for a Poetry P reading of her latest book, Island. Hello, my name is Patricia, and this is the Poetry P podcast. I think you're in for a poetry treat today. Kristen Lindquist is back at P Towers to read Haibun and haiku to us. You might notice that we recorded this a little while back, so I thought I'd bring it bang up to date with a little snow one-liner from Kristen's blog. Details in the show notes. Willing suspension of disbelief. Snowdrops in fresh snow. Willing suspension of disbelief. Snowdrops in fresh snow. And that was from Kristen's blog. Now, this might be a good time to remind you that if you are listening in real time, March 2024, you have only a few days to get your Turiyavase haiku to us to be considered for the next journal. And then on the 16th of March, we're opening the Haibun reading period. Hopefully Kristen's work will inspire you, if you need it, to submit for both. At the end of February, the first journal of the year was published. I'll put that link in the show notes for those of you who haven't read it yet. In case you didn't notice, you do get the journal as part of the ISA and the Busan membership schemes. Check out Buy Me a Coffee. Anyway, that's enough housekeeping. Let's head off to Maine, a place I've never been to, but I feel I know it through Kristen's work. Hope you enjoy it. Kristen Lindquist is back in the house. Not exactly in the house, because we live so far apart. She may not even be in her own home. Perhaps I should explain. Kristen spends quite a bit of time on Monhegan Island, which is off the coast of Maine, where she generally lives in the US. So, Kristen, welcome back. Tell us, are you home or are you home on the island?
I am home. I am home on the mainland, my mainland home. When you're on the island, you refer to the mainland as America. People say, yeah, I'm going into America tomorrow. So I'm back in America. And for the winter. But yes, I did spend the summer on Monhegan Island working for the Monhegan Museum of Art and History. So that was a nice interlude out there. Got back in early October.
Lovely. Now, you've read to us before, and for anyone who hasn't heard it, I'll put the link in the show notes. Now, in that previous reading from your book, It Always Comes Back, we were introduced to the island, Monhegan. And Kristen, I think you're going to be taking us back there because you love it so much in today's reading.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a special place. I think I've said before, it's one of only 15 islands off the coast of Maine that have a year-round population. So it's a special place. And you can't take cars on the ferry. It's only a passenger ferry. So people out there have, you know, their trucks to do their work, fishermen in the hotels, but basically people have to come out there and hoof it the whole time. It's just dirt roads and trails, and 3/4 of the island is conserved. It's under conservation since the early 50s. So most of the island is wildlands, and of course it's an island, so a lot of ocean access and a few lobster fishermen in the harbor, and it's a lovely spot.
So no Uber?
No Uber, but there is a guy who has a golf cart taxi and there's a brewery. So if you happen to be up at the brewery and you can't make it back to your inn, there's 3 inns out there. You can't make it back to your room. You can call the taxi and he'll come pick you up in his golf cart and bring you back to the inn.
That's really cute. It sounds like the mountain village near where I live, with a no cars on it, just one or two golf carts and things to move the cases around. Sounds lovely. Now, Kristen, you dedicated this book that you're going to read to us today, Island, to the memory of your grandparents. And you credit them with inspiring you with this love of islands, which really left me wanting to know, where did their love of islands come from?
So my grandparents moved to Maine from New Jersey. My grandfather was a New Yorker, and they were living in northern New Jersey in the suburbs. And they moved to Maine in the early 60s as the sort of part of the first wave of back to the landers. And they came to Lincolnville, right here on the coast, and bought a saltwater farm. And were among the first organic farmers in Maine. And they weren't doing commercial farming. They were just farming for themselves so they could live off what they grew. And had some sheep and some chickens and a lovely view of Penobscot Bay and the islands in the bay, the western side of Penobscot Bay. And so that became, the islands out there were part of our neighborhood. And so we would take, they had a couple of boats over the years, and we would take a boat out there and spend the day on one of the islands. And it was just a special experience. When I was a little older, my grandmother, whose parents came from Scotland, took me to Scotland. They both took me to Scotland, and we spent 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks, 1 week of which we spent on the Isle of Skye. And we also visited the Isle of Harris and Orkney. So.
Actually, I was going to ask because I had a feeling that Scotland and possibly Scandinavia, Sweden, is somewhere
My
in your background.
grandfather's grandfather, I think, was from Sweden. So, yep.
Okay, so you've got a bit of European heritage in there,
A lot
Kristen.
of Northern European heritage, yes. Some German in there too.
Which is why all that cold weather in Maine, I guess, is okay with your general being, because you come from the colder parts, perhaps. It is actually a bit nippy here today, I have to tell you, and I'm not even in the far north. But
I think
I
it's snowing somewhere in Maine today, not
do
in.
not even know. I watched the telly last night and they spoke about the snow coming down. I thought, no, don't tell me you could see
I am seeing flake. My first snowflakes of this winter are falling right now.
Oh, that's disgusting. Ugh.
Sorry.
Okay, I forgive you for bringing snow into my life. And the other thing that was interesting to me was my son now lives in northern New Jersey, and he's visited. He was out in Maine, I think I told you, but he didn't make it out to Monhegan Island. But he loved it. He said Maine was absolutely beautiful, and
Oh, good.
the pictures he sent back were gorgeous. So I suspect I'll be paying you a visit before too long, Kristen.
Excellent. That would be wonderful.
I think it's time that we went and visited with you and your island. So I'm going to ask you to give us a bit of a reading, Kristen.
So this is from my book, Island. And this first piece is a haibun, and then I'll follow it with some haiku from the book. Offerings. An island 10 miles off the coast of Maine, a pocket beach, one early spring morning. Past a granite seawall that blooms with sunburst lichen, I poke through detritus left by the low tide, seaworn pebbles and beach glass, mussel shells, discarded lobster claws, and the rubber bands that held them closed, disintegrating bait bags, fragments of chimney brick, pottery shards, lemon rinds. Fish bones, waving offshore beyond the rusted shipwreck, kelp strands. I tuck into my pocket every yellow periwinkle I find until I have a whole handful of yellow, unlike any other color on this beach, a hopeful solar yellow with a little seawater trapped inside like a microscopic sloshing tide. To what small ear can I hold up this shell? What distant ocean will sing from its spiraling core? Onshore breeze, the herring weather vane turns into it. Each tiny shell's an empty house, absent now of whatever consciousness a snail possesses. A jangling heap of shells rattling in my pocket, tiny exoskeletons of calcium carbonate. I shake them out onto the sand as if their pattern could reveal some kind of augury. If only I knew what to ask. His song amplified by morning fog. Yellow warbler.
You may have noticed that we offer memberships. These memberships support the podcast, allow me to keep it going, but they also offer you some benefits. If you go over to our Buy Me a Coffee page, you can find out all about them. Decide if one of them would be of interest to you. You can pay monthly or annually. And if you'd prefer to use PayPal, just email me and we'll sort it out. You can also use Buy Me a Coffee to give us a one-off support now and again when you can afford it. Please have a think about it. Thank you.
And now some haiku for you. Spruce filtered light. A raven tells the island I'm here. Spruce filtered light. A raven tells the island I'm here. Gray seals in surf. The tingling skin of my selkie self. Gray seals in surf. The tingling skin of my selkie self. Ready or not, a girl aligns her body with an apple tree. Ready or not, a girl aligns her body with an apple tree. Autumn gale, a crowd of propane tanks huddles on the wharf. Autumn gale, a crowd of propane tanks huddles on the wharf. An arrowhead, almost a rock again. Winter storm watch. An arrowhead, almost a rock again. Winter storm watch. Island birthday. He tosses another shell onto the midden. Island birthday. He tosses another shell onto the midden. All the ripe peaches stolen from the tree. Spill of moonlight. All the ripe peaches stolen from the tree. Spill of moonlight. Thank you.
Kristen, thank you very much. That was an excellent reading. You only chose to read one of the haibun. There are more haibun in the book. When you sent me your choices and said you sent them without any haibun because you were a bit worried about the length of the reading, but I thought we have to have one in there, and I do love a longer haibun. So I'm so pleased that I could persuade you to read Offerings for us. Thank you very much. I thought it was a great intro to the book.
Thank you.
And periwinkles. When I read this, I wasn't sure about periwinkles. I just know them as a flower, but it's obviously a shell, isn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah.
Yep.
So,
yep. And I think you have them on the North Atlantic. I mean, the eastern side of the Atlantic too.
I'm sure we do. Probably, if I went back to my childhood, I'd probably got my mum's house probably got a load of boxes of little shells, including periwinkles, that I would have found on the beach. I think, like any child, I was a bit of a shell collector. Mm-hmm. And I just love this one. To what small ear can I hold up this shell? What distant ocean will sing from its spiraling core? That was brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I have some questions, of course. I'll start with gray seals in surf, the tingling skin of my selkie self. Now, tell me about selkies, because the word I only came to recently know, so I know what they are. Can you tell us a little bit about selkies?
Sure. I'm not an expert by any means, but I first learned about selkies when I was in Scotland as a kid. It's a Celtic folklore thing. They're seals who can take off their skins and become human. And it's interesting, Selkies or, shape-shifting seals who can become people also show up in Icelandic folklore, I've heard, and also some of the Northwestern, like Canadian US native peoples have similar stories about seals like that. So these seals can take off their skins, become human, and they can marry humans, etc. They're very alluring, attractive. The Selkie bride is, that's a big theme. But they need to be able to get back into their skin to become seals. So there's, the story of the husband who marries the Selkie and he hides her skin and she finally finds it again and she's able to go back to her seal people. Have you ever seen the movie The Secret of Roan Inish?
Nope, gonna have to write that
Oh,
one down. Okay.
well, I recommend it. It's a lovely movie. When it came out, I saw it several times because I was so in love with it. It's set in Ireland and it's about a family. Well, I won't tell you much about it, but because it's just an enchanting story. But anyway, yes, it involves real life Selkies in a way.
Okay. Okay, so The Secret of Roan Inish.
Rowan Inish, yep.
Okay, got to find that one. If I find it, I'll put it in the show notes and people can find it too. That was great. And what intrigued me about this book is I wanted to ask you, do you spend a lot of time reading about myths and legends? Because this is not the Selkie is not the only inference or reference to myths and legends in the book. I mean, I just picked out Spruce Filtered Light, A Raven Tells the Island I'm Here. Are myths important to you, and do you use them a lot in your poetry?
I do consciously and unconsciously.
Okay.
But yeah, I've studied. I mean, when I was a kid, that was one of my favorite things to read were, the Greek and Roman myths, and then branched out into the Nordic mythology and native mythologies. And then in grad school, I studied folklore quite a bit. So I do. I love that stuff. And I think they make great cultural touchstones in haiku. Because we've all feel like everyone, no matter where they are, has some background of some mythology, and there's a lot of similarities in world mythology. So yeah, I guess that's an interest. Although I have to say, Spruce Filtered Light, I wasn't consciously thinking of mythology,
Okay.
but when you ask me about that, it's making me think how, Odin had the two ravens, Thought and Memory, who would fly out over the world every day, and then they'd come back and they'd whisper in his ears, what was going on in the world of humans. And that's kind of what's going on in this poem in a way. I was trying to capture that moment. When you're in the woods and a raven flies over and it'll be like, making its crazy noises and whatever, or it'll just be flying and you can tell the second it sees you because it will either suddenly change course or it will stop making its noise or it will make a different noise. So it's just, there's this moment where you're just like, oh,
Oh,
it
okay. I'm
saw
going
me.
to have to keep an eye on them because I was out walking and I forget where this week, and there were a whole flock of them and they were making a hell of a racket, but I mean, they must have seen me and I don't recall them changing in any way, shape or form in the way they were calling out. So I must just keep an eye. People should know that thanks to Kristen, I have become more attuned, shall we say, to the birds where I live. And Kristen, I have been taking one of the bird apps that you recommended to me out in the woods as I go along. And the birds in my woods are very unfriendly types. They sing along quite happily, but they hide. And it doesn't matter whether I've got my binoculars with me, I can never find them. And I'm particularly interested in the robin. There are robins all the way, they just populate our woods. and I can never see them. And I was up there not so long ago, and the wardens were around. They'd set up a table and they were talking, you know, showing people what was available in the woods. And they were showing pictures of these robins. And I said, I know they're there because I can hear them, but I can't ever see them. And they just looked at me as if I had two heads. You've never seen a robin? Yes, of course I've seen a robin, but not round here. Anyway, there you go. Now I have another question, and I'm being really dense, although I think since I've sat and I've looked at this poem time and again, and I think I've figured it out now, but I'm going to ask you the question. So the poem is, an arrowhead, almost a rock again, winter storm watch. An arrowhead, almost a rock again, winter storm watch. So, Kristen, before I show my ignorance and stupidity, could you tell me about this poem, please?
Sure. So this is a Monhegan poem. Monhegan was a, for the Wabanaki natives, hundreds of years ago, before Europeans started using the island, it was a summer camp. Mm-hmm. There's a freshwater source on the island, and they'd go out there and they'd spend the summer. So there were a couple of middens on the island. And even now, especially in the winter when the storms are stronger and they stir up the rocks a little bit more, I have friends who live out there year round, and they love to spend time in the winter on the beach just looking for arrowheads.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has found some amazing arrowheads. And I'm always finding rocks that almost, you know, maybe you could. I've never found an arrowhead. I've always wanted to find one. But there are rocks, you know, that are, maybe you could say, oh yeah, maybe this had a, you know. So it just made me think about the arrowheads that have been out there for so long and been through so many winter storms that they're worn down and that you can't even tell they were ever chipped into an arrowhead, that they are now just back to being non-human artifacts, I guess.
So they've re-transformed into the, it's sort of almost their original. They've just become lumps of rock again.
They've become wild rocks.
Yeah, yeah.
Rather it's, than tame rocks.
we've been looking at Zocca, and I know it's something that interests you, and that's sort of like the transition that of Zocca, the how nature will transform itself. Mm-hmm. Left to its own devices, it'll come back to itself again. And so from that respect, it was very interesting for me to think of this, because I have seen in museums, I don't think I've ever found anything anywhere, the flints that have been made into arrowheads. Mm-hmm. Beautiful little things. But mm-hmm. It just made me think about those being eroded, tossed around on the beach, whatever, and becoming, if you just pick them up, you'd never know what they were anymore. So I think I got there in the end, Kristen.
Good.
What I hadn't put two and two together, and it's very interesting to think of the juxtaposition that you've got there, the arrowhead, almost a rock again, with the winter storm watch. Because I guess in the olden days, well, there's two things. In the olden days, when the Wabanaki, did you say, were a resident on the island, they of course would be looking, they would be on winter storm watch, because I guess they'd have to get out of the place and get to some form of shelter that would be useful for the winter. So there's that element of it too. But then mm-hmm. there's the idea of your friends on winter storm watch wandering across the beach after a storm looking for these arrowheads. So it's a lovely poem. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now, another one of my favorites was, all the ripe peaches stolen from the tree, spill of moonlight. All the ripe peaches stolen from the tree, spill of moonlight. This one takes me back to my childhood, and perhaps back to the books of Enid Blyton, which I know are not de rigueur at the moment, but her child protagonists might well be stealing ripe peaches, or in our case, probably apples, from trees. And I remember as a kid being terribly jealous, reading these books of these five or seven kids wandering about in the countryside, breaking into people's apple orchards and scrumping as they say. And then I wondered, because we had this discussion about words that have traveled the Atlantic and their pronunciations, has scrumping made it across to the States? If I talked about scrumping, would people know what I'm talking about?
You know, I don't remember ever hearing the word, but I think in context, people would completely understand what you're talking about, because that's a very descriptive word.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay, I'll look out for it in one of your poems then.
I'm going to start using it, yeah.
Before we go on, actually, just to go back to our previous conversation, you spoke of middens, and we've heard it in one of your, but the word midden, we heard it in one of your poems as well. I'm very familiar with it, but I wonder if everyone will know what you're talking about. So can you explain the idea of the midden to us, Kristen?
Well, there's probably a technical term for it, which I can't reel off the top of my head, but I'm basically, it's like a waste heap. It's like an archaeological waste heap. So here on the coast of Maine, there are quite a few spots where there are oyster shell middens. You know, if you're an archaeologist or you know what to look for. But I don't. Yeah, that's where people look for artifacts, you know, that besides things that would have been thrown away with the shells, or that would have been used nearby. That's why it's a good spot to look for artifacts like arrowheads.
So I'm sorry, but we have finished our reading right at the moment. I'm terribly sorry. We're almost finished. But before we go on, this is a Red Moon Press book. I guess you can find it on their website if you'd like to purchase it.
Yes. Yep. You can buy it from Red Moon Press directly, or you can contact me at my website, which is just www.kristenlindquist.com.
And you've got a special section on your website for all your books, because you've got a few now. You've got a little collection going.
I do.
So I'll put that and Red Moon on the web, on the show notes, so people can come along and have a look and see what else they can find there.
Great, thank you.
But you have one last poem to read to us. Would you do us the honor?
Yeah. So this is the last poem in the book. Salt spray, this body of water. Salt spray, this body of water.
That's it, Kristen. Thank you so much for coming along and being with us today and reading to us. And like I said, I will put all the details in the show notes so people can go and purchase it. It's a lovely book. It's a lovely size. It's a lovely quality. And I really enjoyed it. And I would say to people, get hold of it and read some of the, or read it all, obviously, but I really enjoyed the Highbun, because, as I said to you before, I quite like a longer Highbun. And although some of them are short, there are a couple, at least, like Offerings, that are a good length and allow us to read your prose at its best, because I think your prose is really very, very good, Kristen. Very good indeed.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Patricia. Well, you will be happy to hear then that I have another ebook coming out from Snapshot Press. Probably sometime in 2024. I'm trying to think what the title is.
Well, it might it change? You never know. It might change.
No, well, yeah, hopefully it won't. But yeah, it's a book of Highbun. It's called What We Tell Each Other.
Oh, okay. So
it was the winner of the Snapshot Press e-chapbook award. So it will be available as a free ebook on the Snapshot Press website as soon as it's posted, which I don't know when that is yet.
Well, once you know, let us know, and I can put something up on the website, and maybe you'll come back and read to us, because you're certainly giving your husband a run for his money. I am not, as Kristen knows, I usually take, or I often take, his books with me on holiday to read, but this time, Kristen, I was away for a couple of weeks and I took yours. Thank you so much. Thanks, Kristen.
Thank you, Patricia. It's a pleasure.
I really enjoyed chatting to Kristen and hearing her read to us. And as so often happens, as we were wrapping up the Zoom call, we got chatting about something, in this case, writing Highbun. Kristen is fast becoming a really exciting proponent of that art, I think. So I'm looking forward to reading her latest book, What We Tell Each Other, and I'll certainly let you know when it's out. Anyway, she said something interesting about the Haibun she read to us, the one at the beginning, Offering. It is apparently much edited, and she wasn't entirely happy with the haiku that were in the original version. So the first two haiku in the piece are haiku that she'd already written and which she plugged into the piece. The relationship she felt between these two new pieces and the prose worked much better. That vindicated something I have found myself. When I first started writing haibun, I'd write the prose and then the haiku, but the relationship between the two often didn't work. They were essentially a continuation of the prose, and that's not really the point, is it? They should add something to the prose, with a little shift. Not so much that they bear no relation to the prose, but enough to add more depth to the haibun. So I chatted to Sean O'Connor too, someone we all know who is a stellar writer of haibun. Now he said to me that he always starts by thinking of the theme, then writing the haiku around that theme. And last, and certainly not least, he writes the prose, plugging in the haiku as he goes along. I changed the way I wrote haibun, having talked to him, and did it his way. And I honestly feel that the quality of my haibun instantly improved. If you feel there's something lacking in your haibun, why not try writing the haiku first and writing the prose around them? It could add that little je ne sais quoi to your work. Well, that's it from me. And of course, the lovely Kristen Lindquist. Links to her book are in the show notes. If you've enjoyed the podcast or the video on YouTube, please leave a review or a comment, and of course a like if it's possible. The more we have, the more people will find us. So thank you very much. I'd appreciate it if you could do that. Thanks for coming along today and listening to Kristen's poetry, and I look forward to being with you next time. Until then, keep writing. And in Kristen's honour, I'm going to play out the podcast with the sound effects of birds I came across in the woods one day this week. Hope you find them soothing. Remember to check the show notes, and if something's missing, just email me. Ciao.